Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Teck Resources 2021 QB2 virtual site visit event. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. This conference call is being recorded on Monday, November 1st, 2021. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Fraser Phillips, Senior Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Kate. Depending on where you're joining us from today, good morning or good afternoon. On behalf of the entire senior management team, welcome to Teck's QB2 virtual site visit. Please note that this event is being recorded, and the recordings will be posted on our website. Our presentation today is available in the investor section of our website at teck.com. Please note, today's presentation contains forward-looking statements. Various risks and uncertainties may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statements. Please refer to slides two and three for the assumptions underlying our forward-looking statements. In addition, we will reference various non-GAAP measures throughout this presentation. Explanations and reconciliations regarding these measures can be found in the appendices of our presentations and our most recent filed quarterly press release on our website. Turning to our agenda, Don Lindsay, our President and Chief Executive Officer, will begin today's presentation with brief introductory remarks focused on Teck's strategy to capitalize on our industry-leading growth, copper growth profile as we rebalance our portfolio towards low-carbon metals. Following Don's remarks, we will take you on a tour of our flagship QB2 copper growth project virtually, where we will walk you through some of our key project locations and highlight some of the major ESG elements of the project. Given the footage you're about to see was filmed throughout the third quarter, the video will be followed by a presentation by Red Conger, our Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, and Alex Christopher, Senior Vice President, Exploration Projects and Technical Services. Both Red and Alex are currently on the ground in Chile to bring you the latest images from QB2 to showcase our latest progress. Our final session will be with Amparo Cornejo, Vice President, Sustainability and External Affairs, Chile. Amparo will give us an update on the latest political developments in Chile. We will wrap up today with a final Q&A session and Don's closing remarks. After the presentation, a replay of the webcast and the video of our virtual site tour will be made available in the investors section of our website. As a reminder to analysts and investors who wish to ask a question during the Q&A session at the end, please dial into the conference center. Please limit your questions to one so that as many people as possible can participate. With that, I'll turn it over to Don.
Thank you, Fraser, and thank you everyone for joining us today. Over the past 3 years, we've spent a lot of time talking with you about our progress at QB2, and today we wanted to really bring our flagship QB2 project to life for you with some fresh images from the ground so that you too can share in our excitement around this transformative project. I wanted to start by first discussing the significant growth ahead of us that will be driven by the startup of QB2. We believe that we are one of the best-positioned companies in the world to capitalize on the strong demand for metals and minerals driven by global growth and the transition to a lower carbon economy, and most notably, copper. Our solid operational performance in the third quarter of 2021, combined with an extremely favorable commodity price environment, enabled us to generate record EBITDA and very meaningful free cash flow. Looking into the fourth quarter, we see continued strength in commodity prices for all of our principal products, and particularly steelmaking coal, but also copper, zinc, and energy, and is setting us up for another strong quarter ahead. We have a disciplined approach to capital allocation. We aim to maintain a strong balance sheet and will rigorously assess returning additional cash to shareholders against our portfolio of attractive growth options. We expect to realize tremendous value from our robust pipeline of copper projects as we accelerate capital-efficient growth opportunities. In doing so, we'll rebalance our portfolio to copper while reducing the proportion of carbon in our overall business. Looking ahead, we will be building on the success of our RACE21 Innovation Technology Program and further embedding those transformational changes that have driven step change improvements in productivity, efficiency, safety, and sustainability. Of course, all of this is underpinned by our focus on strong sustainability performance, which was emphasized recently by an upgrade to AA from A, by MSCI for our ESG performance. You know, Teck is already a significant copper producer, and moving forward with QB2 as a cornerstone, we have one of the very best copper production growth profiles in the industry. QB2 startup in the second half of next year will double our consolidated copper production by 2023. And as shown here, this compares to an average copper production growth of 21% for our diversified mining peers and just 11% for our copper peers, and this is all according to Wood Mackenzie. To look at it another way, consider the growth of Teck's entire base metals business compared to our peers, as shown on this slide here. We have substantial, high-quality resources in attractive mineral districts and stable jurisdictions. From Canada, U.S., Chile, to Peru, our world-class operations are expected to drive meaningful production and earnings growth. Following the completion of QB2, our base metals business is expected to grow by more than 60% to more than 850,000 tons in 2023 as measured in copper equivalent production. So Teck offers investors strong copper growth exposure at a time when copper demand is set to increase significantly. We know that there's a lot of anticipation in the market about QB2 coming online, and as such, we pulled together some scenarios to illustrate the magnitude of EBITDA that QB2 could generate under various copper prices once it's at full production. And I want to emphasize that this is not guidance. As you know, we don't provide this type of guidance. So as you can see on this slide, QB2 has the potential to transform our cash flows. We're nearing an inflection point where we will move from our projected 2021 capital spending on QB2 or a cash outflow of $2.5 billion, we'll be moving then to an annual inflow of between $1.8 and $2.6 billion in EBITDA at full production, depending on the copper price. So that's quite a switch. And combined with the cash flows from other business units, this contributes to the potential available cash flow of roughly $4 to $6 per share. Applying our capital allocation framework, a minimum of 30% of our available cash flow will be returned to shareholders. The remaining 70% could also be returned to shareholders or deployed to additional copper growth options in the portfolio or repay debt or any combination of these. And we could do all of this while maintaining a very strong balance sheet. We do have a solid track record in years past of returning cash to shareholders. We plan to build on this going forward, and the significant EBITDA generation potential of QB2 could drive incremental funds available for supplemental distributions to shareholders. So I hope you can see why we are so excited about the near-term potential of the business, and specifically the contribution of QB2. So in summary, this is a very exciting time for Teck. In the third quarter, refined copper prices averaged $4.25 a pound, 3% lower than last quarter's average of $4.40 per pound when the market reached record highs, but still 44% higher than in the same quarter of 2020. We are poised to bring industry-leading copper growth on stream as global growth and the transition to a lower carbon economy drive even more new copper demand. And we're strengthening how we operate, both through cutting-edge innovation to improve productivity, as well as leading ESG performance. And we have a leadership team with the right mix of skills and experience to deliver on our strategy. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy the virtual tour of our flagship copper growth project, QB2, in Chile. Hi, I'm Don Lindsay, President and CEO of Teck, and I'm pleased to introduce you to this video tour of our flagship QB2 copper project in Chile. I want to start with some context on why QB2 is so exciting for Teck, how it will transform our company, and how it is well-timed to help meet the global need for copper to fuel the low-carbon future. Copper, of course, is an essential metal for the technologies and infrastructure needed to address climate change, in everything from electric vehicles to renewable power generation. The low-carbon economy of the future will be built on a backbone of metals, a network of clean power generation, transmission, and usage
that will power our cities, move us, connect us, and decarbonize the world. And that means that copper demand is expected to rise significantly, more than doubling in the decades ahead. Meeting that growing demand is why Teck is focused on copper growth. We're already a significant copper producer with active operations in Canada, Peru, and Chile, and our growth strategy is aimed at accelerating our growth in copper. And that will rebalance our portfolio towards the critical metals needed for the low-carbon transition and transforming Teck into a major global copper supplier. Now, the QB2 project is the cornerstone of this strategy. QB2 is one of the world's largest undeveloped copper resources. It will have 316,000 tons of copper equivalent production per year for the first 5 years of the mine life. And there is significant potential to further expand the operation in future phases such as QB3. QB2 is an exceptional project. It is cost-effective with an extremely low strip ratio and low all-in sustaining costs. It's high-tech, incorporating automated haul capability and a remote operating center. And it's at the leading edge for environmental and social management with strong relationships with local communities and indigenous peoples. QB2 will use green power to minimize carbon emissions. And it will also use desalinated seawater in place of freshwater to help protect a scarce local resource. QB2 also benefits from strong partnerships that support execution and help to de-risk Teck's investment. And that includes Sumitomo Metal Mining and Sumitomo Corporation, which together have a collective 30% interest in QB2. And, of course, INAMI, a Chilean state agency, which holds a 10% non-funding interest. Now, together, we have an experienced team executing construction of the project with our industry-leading EPCM partner, Bechtel. At the end of the day, with QB2, we're building a generational asset, one that will generate enormous benefits for people and communities locally and nationally, while also transforming our company, making Teck a leading global copper producer and providing great value for our investors and stakeholders, and supporting our commitment to responsible mining. We are very excited to share more with you about this exceptional project.
Cumadabanco ore body is located in the Tarapacá region of northern Chile at an elevation of approximately 4,400 meters. The area we are developing lies underneath the mineralization mined over the last several decades when we produced cathode copper during the initial solvent extraction electrowinning phase of QB operations. Given we have already mined the near surface for supergene mineralization, we have effectively pre-stripped the QB2 sulfide resource, and this helps contribute to its very low strip ratio. In fact, QB2 has a strip ratio of 0.7 to 1 over the current planned life of mine, meaning only 0.7 tons of waste needs to be moved for every ton of ore mined. Notably, QB2 is expected to sustain a low strip ratio for many decades. This significantly reduces sustaining capital by reducing requirements for additional equipment such as trucks and shovels, and that in turn translates into less maintenance and lower operating costs. This is a key competitive advantage that QB2 has over many of the other major well-known copper deposits in the world. And according to Wood Mackenzie, QB2 strip ratio is much more favorable than other notable large copper operations in Chile, such as Escondida, which has a strip ratio of 2.6, or Collahuasi, which has a strip ratio of 3.7. QB2 will develop the sulfide resource underlying the existing operation to a maximum depth of about 720 meters, and the deposit remains open in multiple directions, with ample opportunities to increase reserves and resources. In fact, the QB2 project only utilizes approximately 18% of the 2020 reserves and resources, and it has a relatively consistent grade profile. So longer term, the potential is there for doubling or tripling of throughput as we look to QB3 and further expansion opportunities beyond that. Expansion will be built off existing infrastructure, providing greater economies of scale, lower capital intensity, and lower execution risk. It's very exciting to be associated with the development of the Quebrada Blanca deposit, which has the potential to become a top 5 copper producer as we further leverage the vast ore body. Quebrada Blanca was previously mined for its supergene mineralization, producing cathode copper. It's a porphyry copper molysulfide deposit that is characterized by disseminated, breccia, and vein-related mineralization over an area of approximately 5 kilometers by 3 kilometers. Since 2017, we've grown QB's resources, excluding reserves, by a whopping 94%, and we expect to grow them further with additional drilling. Based on the 2020 reserves and resources, the ore body contains 1.4 billion tons of proven and probable reserves at 0.51% copper and 0.21% moly. And this reserve classification is basically only limited by the current permitted capacity of the tailings management facility. It contains another 3.6 billion tons in measured and indicated resources and 3.1 billion tons in the inferred category. The size and upside of the current ore body really demonstrates both the quality and long-term potential of this amazing asset.
Overall, construction is advancing very well across the project, and we continue to gain steady progress with our best quarterly gain to date. The project team's response to the challenging COVID situation has been nothing short of exceptional. They very safely and effectively managed the ramp up through the latter half of 2020 and through 2021, despite the challenges related to a significant second wave of COVID in Chile during the first half of 2021. Our protocols, including proactive screening through testing, continue to be effective and have been key to the successful advancement of the project. With COVID-19 cases in Chile declining, coupled with the country's and project workforce's high rates of vaccination, we are aggressively ramping up workforce levels. We surpassed 60% overall project progress in early August and are confident we will see first production in the second half of 2022, absent another significant wave of COVID or variants. Looking at the project in more detail, QB2 has three major project locations. The mine mill area, which includes the mine, concentrator, and tailings management facility. The port, which includes concentrate filtration, storage, and shiploading facilities, as well as the desalinization plant. And the linear works that connect the two, including the concentrate and desalinated water transport systems, high voltage power lines, pumping and electrical substations, as well as camps and access roads. Looking in more detail at the mine and mill area, we are building Teck's largest ever copper ore processing facility with a conventional concentrator plant that has an initial design capacity of 143,000 tons of ore per day. Our mining fleet of Caterpillar 794 haul trucks is capable of autonomous haul, and these will deliver the ore to the primary crusher. The crushed ore will then be carried to the dome-covered coarse ore stockpile via 1.5 kilometers of overland conveyor belts. Ore will be recovered from the coarse ore stockpile with a system of reclaim tunnels and delivered to the grinding circuit where it will be mixed with desalinated water and ground to liberate the copper minerals. It will then flow to the flotation circuit where we separate the copper minerals from the non-ore minerals and create copper concentrate, which is then thickened before being transported by a pipeline to the port area. The critical path for the project remains the concentrator grinding lines, and these continue to progress very well. All six mills are in place, and we continue to advance the structural electromechanical components, as well as piping and cabling. The critical work fronts in the mine mill area are progressing well, and we are working to ensure that the required sub and support systems are in place in time for the commissioning and ramp up of the concentrator. The tailings are thickened at the concentrator, removing valuable water for reuse before moving the tailings via gravity transport system about 12 kilometers to the tailings management facility. This facility is being built to industry-leading standards for safety and stability. That includes meeting protocols established by the Mining Association of Canada and technical guidance of best practices from the Canadian Dams Association and the International Commission of Large Dams. And it also aligns with the new global industry standard on tailings management. The tailings management facility includes the starter dam and related infrastructure, a cyclone system for separating sand for construction, and water recovery systems for water management and environmental protection. At the tailings management facility, the starter dam is advancing well. Work is ongoing on the tailings transport system, as well as other work areas related to tailings deposition and water recovery. It is important to note here that we are using our new truck fleet to deliver the materials to the dam, and the fleet is performing very well. This has essentially commissioned a portion of our fleet ahead of pre-strip and other mining activities. QB2 will also include the first large-scale use of desalinated seawater at a mining operation in the Tarapacá region of Chile. At the port site, we are constructing a desalinization plant for makeup water, as well as other facilities for receiving and loading concentrate onto ships for the efficient transport to world markets. We are advancing with the jetty, desalinization plant, and other support facilities, including our electrical substations, to start commissioning later this year. The desalinization plant is one of the first facilities that will be commissioned in order to start pumping water to the concentrator. Construction of the linear works, which includes pipelines, pump stations, 23 kV substations, and 220 kV power transmission lines, is in full swing. These facilities are well advanced and will be available in time to commission the concentrator.
So we've created an extremely strong team here between Tech and Bechtel, our EPCM contractor. The Bechtel team's got loads of copper experience across South America, and they've worked together on many projects. We've complemented that with a strong Tech team that's focused on the front-end enablers, the permitting, environmental liberations and control, as well as oversight of Transelec on the 220 kV transmission system. The project has been advancing on or above plan here for the last year, which has been an extremely important accomplishment during the pandemic. For every mega project, when we've got six or seven geographic areas reporting progress, it's extremely difficult to get all the stars aligned to make our progress targets on a month-end basis. And there is nothing more enjoyable, fun, challenging, and complex than a mining project in Chile across this massive footprint and elevation.
It's really the culmination of a lot of work to be able to be on a job that has a desal plant, a pipeline, a tailings dam, and a 140,000-ton-a-day concentrator. Focus on safety is our number one concern. We track every vehicle with real-time GPS. And also in the work front, we focus on leading indicators. So we've got 10% of the workforce involved in our observer program that we focus by area and supervisor in order to identify the risks and find measures to mitigate the dangers of those risks on a weekly basis.
COVID-19 has had an unprecedented impact on the mining industry worldwide. At QB2, the response by our team has been phenomenal. This was thanks in no small part to our strong health and safety culture. We are creatively collaborating with Bechtel and the various contractors to build on our ramp-up and construction success to date. And this is possible thanks to our comprehensive protocols and preventative measures. These include performing PCR tests on employees before their shift commences and pre-screening to keep the virus away from our work sites. These measures have been key to our success in managing COVID at site while responsibly advancing construction. Chile has cited this effort as a model for managing workplace health and safety during these unprecedented times. And Bechtel indicates this is one of their best performing projects worldwide for managing the spread of the virus. Chile is also doing an impressive job of administering COVID-19 vaccinations, and our medical teams at the project and mine site clinics are administering vaccines to our employees and contractors in accordance with the national eligibility protocols. These positive developments bode well for project momentum and upside potential going forward. And as a result, we have been able to aggressively ramp up to peak workforce levels and keep all major project areas on track to our target first production date. As a new major project, QB2 is being built from the ground up to incorporate leading technology and innovation in the mining sector. One part of that is the Integrated Operations Center, or IOC, which will be located in Santiago. From the IOC, our teams will fully operate the production chain for QB2, centralizing resources and data for decision-making and optimizing performance. The IOC will obtain real-time operational data from the deposit and is directly connected with the mine site, located 1,700 kilometers away. It's one of the most advanced in the world, taking the best approaches we have seen from other centers a step further. The facility has been designed so that multidisciplinary operations teams, including integrated planning, value chain optimization, process control, and reliability, will have real-time visibility and tools to remotely manage operations at QB2. There are also benefits to having a center like this located remotely in Santiago. It allows us to attract and retain talent from a much broader pool being located in a major city. It will also allow us to have fewer employees working at altitude, which is a significant benefit from a health and safety perspective. And it will greatly improve efficiency as we can monitor production and energy use in real time, helping us better control costs and improve our sustainability performance. QB2 is also expected to start operating with a mixed fleet of traditional and new autonomous haul trucks with a 5-year transition to a fully autonomous fleet. The key benefits of autonomous trucks are improved operational efficiency and truck availability, and improved safety performance because they will allow people to be removed from higher-risk working environments.
QV2 will further demonstrate our commitment with responsible mining. Teck is already one of the lowest GHG emissions in the mining industry globally. That means that we produce less carbon per each ton of production. We have a solid strategy that aims to be carbon neutral by 2050. And in Chile, starting in 2022, we will source half of the energy required by QV2 from renewable energies. And in 2030, 100% of the energy required for this relevant project will become from those sources. This is equivalent of reducing 800,000 tons of carbon, which represents an amount of 170,000 cars out of the street. Of our responsible approach to QV2, Teck is committed to ensure cultural heritage is protected and preserved. We have a series of measures to do this, while at the same time allowing QV2 construction to successfully advance. For example, during the construction at the QV2 port area, our teams discovered mummified human remains dating back to early formative period. This is an extraordinary discovery. The remains, which were in an excellent state of preservation due to the climate and geographical conditions in the area, were greatly helped researchers learn more about the history of the territory, as well as explore how these original peoples were able to adapt to the harsh desert environment by taking advantage of all the sea had to offer. In collaboration with authorities, Teck assisted in the recovery of the remains. We also employed the use of precision technology to obtain geometric records of the entire dig process. With these records, we were able to preserve information for future scientific studies and to enhance and preserve the locality's cultural heritage. The artifacts will be deposited in a museum institution approved by the Chilean Council of Monuments, CMM.
Uno de los principales desafíos que enfrenta la industria minera desde el punto de vista ambiental tiene que ver con el uso razonable del agua. Es por esta razón que en Quebrada Blanca estamos construyendo nuestra planta desaladora, la primera de la región de Tarapacá, que va a permitir usar solamente agua desalada durante la vida útil de la operación. Y también, en consecuencia, hemos devuelto los derechos de agua dulce al Estado de Chile. Sabemos que la actividad minera tiene un gran impacto en las regiones donde opera, en los territorios en los que está ubicado. En nuestro caso, la región de Tarapacá es una región que tiene una precariedad social muy relevante y por lo tanto, un proyecto de las características del impacto social y económico como es Quebrada Blanca Fase 2, genera un impacto no solo por el empleo directo que ofrece, sino también por todo el encadenamiento productivo y social que establece con otros sectores de la economía regional. En un estudio que hicimos hace algunos años con el economista Roberto Saller, pudimos definir que más del 13% del crecimiento del PIB regional de Tarapacá va a estar asociado a la operación de Quebrada Blanca Fase 2. Por lo tanto, estamos trabajando muy enfocados en generar oportunidades para los habitantes de esta región.
Biodiversity is an important component for the QB2 project. We have a wide variety of biodiversity ranging from the mine site, pipeline, and to the port area. We are committed to studying and monitoring all our species and thus ensuring that we don't have any impact on flora and fauna and our natural resources.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this virtual tour of TAC's exceptional QB2 project. And as I said, this is a generational project that will transform our company, and it's the cornerstone of our copper growth strategy. It will grow our total consolidated copper production by 100%. And that compares to an average consolidated copper production growth of only 21% amongst our diversified peers. And this is according to Wood Mackenzie's estimates from 2021 to 2023. And with first copper targeted for next year, we will be ramping up at the right time to meet growing demand driven by the low-carbon economy. It will be an exceptional operation, low-cost, high-tech, and a leader in environmental and social performance. So we look forward to keeping you updated as our work on QB2 progresses and as we execute on our strategy to strengthen our business, provide value for shareholders, and support the global transition to a cleaner, greener economy. Thank you.
Okay, well, I've participated in a lot of site visits and operation tours in my career, and that's the first time I've ever done one virtually. So we hope you enjoyed that. We're certainly excited to have you with us today and appreciate you joining us. Alex, Christopher, and I are both here in Chile. We've been working directly with our construction and operating teams throughout October. I continue to be very impressed. I have to reiterate this. With you know how well our teams are doing managing our employees' health and safety during this pandemic. They're just doing an outstanding job with that. We have continued to make solid progress on construction since the video was put together, so we thought we would take a little time here today and show you just some updates in a few of the areas just so you're very current with the status of the construction. So Alex is going to take us through some of those recent photos. We'll highlight some current conditions and opportunities that we're finding on the construction site today. So over to you, Alex.
Thanks, Red. So as you know, the projects continue to effectively advance construction with overall progress now past the 2/3 marks. And we're committed to achieving first copper as quickly as possible. To this end, we're focused on the critical systems, which are the key enablers for commissioning and startup to deliver first copper. And these are the desalination plant and associated port-to-pond infrastructure, the crushing, grinding, and flotation systems at the concentrator, and the tailings management facility required for water storage. The project team is laser-focused on ensuring these three systems are delivered and commissioned on schedule to deliver first copper as soon as possible in the second half of 2022. Starting in the mine area, here you can see a September photo showing the truck shop, which along with the mine electrical loop are some of the early components that will be completed and commissioned in the fourth quarter of this year to support pre-stripping activities. Other systems, such as the power substations, are also nearing completion to support commissioning activities. Here you can see an aerial view of the primary crusher from October, where civil and structural works are nearing completion, and we're getting prepared to install the overland conveyor, which will take the crushed ore to the stockpile that will feed the mill. This slide shows some of the progress we have made on the 1.2 kilometer long overland conveyor, where we have commenced installation of the mechanical components. The overland conveyor will transport the crushed ore to the stacker structure, which you can see here. The structure is about 15 stories high and will deliver the crushed ore to the dome cover stockpile.
And I just want to add here that that those systems that Alex just described are all progressing very well, as you can see, and they all provide pre-commissioning opportunities that we can take advantage of prior to commissioning the first grinding line.
So shown here is the grinding area, which remains a critical path for the project. In this photo from October, you can see all six mills, which have been in place for some time, and will continue to advance the structural, electrical, and mechanical components in this area. The flotation area, which you can see on the right of the photo, has all 37 flotation cells in place, and we're advancing piping and electrical in this area.
So something that we've been talking about recently with you all and really wanted to give you a better feel for today, we've been in this situation where we're using these large cranes that you can see in the foreground and to the right there to lift steel and heavy components up for construction. We're targeting getting the vertical components all completed so we can put crane rails in that building and use the internal overhead crane system that's designed inside the building to further enhance construction. It'll be more efficient, easier for our construction crews to do that, and less exposure to weather. We've had some challenges here in the third quarter where we've not been able to lift during high wind conditions and those kinds of things. So key milestone for us coming up.
On this slide here, you can see the starter dam at the tailings management facility. Here we continue to raise the dam in preparation for storage of desalinated water. You can see the lying pond here on the left of the photo where that water will be stored initially. As you can see in the photo, we continue to utilize the Tech mine fleet, as Red mentioned earlier, and this includes some of our new CAT 794s. And these folks are delivering rock fill to the dam. And the mine fleet is performing very well here, and the mine operators claim they're actually the best subcontractor on the project here, and they're doing a great job. Here you can see some of the work that's advancing on the concentrate storage building at the port. We're in the process of erecting the roof. Work here is also advancing well with the desalination plant and the concentrate filtration plant, as well as the other onshore components at the port.
And again, just like we mentioned at the concentrator site, that at this particular location onshore, we've got pre-commissioning opportunities here. Some of the first commissioning efforts will be happening in the port onshore area. The progress has gone well here. We also have work fronts available in this area that would allow us to further increase construction progress as we hire more people to work on the project.
So on this slide here, you can see our construction progress in the port offshore area, where we're advancing the jetty from a number of work fronts using multiple contractors. We have our water intake and outfall piping ready to launch and anchor to the seafloor once we're completed the remaining preparation work for this.
And I've got to point out here, there's just been a lot of creative collaboration between the port authorities that manage when we're allowed to work offshore. There's weather considerations, safety considerations that we all pay close attention to. But between Bechtel and Tech and the port authorities, we've really been very creative to get as much productive time as possible, despite quite a bit of bad weather conditions, particularly in the third quarter of this year.
So construction of the linear works, which includes the pipelines, the pump stations, the choke stations, 23 kilovolt substations, and the 220 kilovolt power transmission lines, is well advanced. In this picture here behind me, you can see some of the pumps and piping at the pump station number 5. So each of these 5 pump stations have 5 pumps and associated facilities that are going to allow us to pump the desalinated water from sea level to 4,400 meters elevation.
And again, these areas also provide pre-commissioning opportunities, progressing well there.
Yeah, so finally on this slide here, the work on the, you can see some work on the pipeline where we're lowering a section of the 36-inch water pipeline into the trench following the welding process. Overall, we continue to be pleased with the progress we're making, and we're excited about building on our construction successes to date with a focus on delivering to the project's key milestones.
So in closing on that up-to-the-minute update, we hope this gives you a better feel for what we're up to and how we're progressing. It's hard to put a project of this magnitude in proper context, just in videos and photos. So, you know, I want to just add a production comparison here, if I may. I have worked on many concentrator construction projects, and I'm thrilled to be part of this team. The combination of low strip ratio at 0.44 to 1, and impressive ore grade at 0.67% equivalent copper, and corresponding second quartile unit production cost at $1.28 a pound over the first 5 years of operation of this project are extremely exciting and, you know, make for an excellent outcome here at the end of our construction efforts the second half of next year. We're really excited to share this with you today and look forward to additional updates in the coming year. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Amparo for a Chilean political update.
Thank you, Red. Good morning and good afternoon, everyone. As Red mentioned, I will refer to the socio-political context in Chile, as the country is facing an important moment in its history. In addition to draft a new constitution, which is always a complex process, the country is under an unprecedented period of elections that contemplates 14 elections in 2 years. The election of the new president of the republic that will take place on November 21st is still very open, and that day the country will also elect representatives of both chambers in Congress, among other authorities. After the social unrest that took place on October 2019, representatives of all parties' coalitions signed an agreement that allowed an institutional way out of the social crisis and started the constitutional process that we are now leading. Despite initial controversies, the constitutional convention that held the inaugural session on July 4th has been able to advance. In 3 months, it has established regulations, all its procedures with high votes, and 7 committees that will draft the final text have been installed. In the regulations, the conventionalists have ratified the two-thirds majority required to approve any constitutional rules. As a consequence, broad agreement within the convention is going to be required, since no force has alone the capacity to impose its view. On October 18, the convention began the discussion of substantive issues and thematic proposals for the new constitution. Once the constitution is ready, it will be submitted to a plebiscite for ratification or exit, and in that case, the vote will be mandatory. In relation to the presidential elections that will take place on November 21st, in the first round, In that moment, there are also going to be election of 27 members of the Senate and 155 deputies. Today, there are 7 candidates seeking to advance to the second round in a scenario of a lot of uncertainty and changes. Up to this moment, there are 4 candidates that seems to have the biggest possibilities of advancing to the second round. Those candidates are Gabriel Boric, José Antonio Kast, Yasna Proboste, and Sebastián Sichel. As no political force has sufficient majority to impose its position, it is understood that the future government, of whatever color, will have to build agreements. The discussion of key projects on the legislative agenda has tended to slow down due to the presidential and parliamentary elections, and also because of the advances at the Constitutional Assembly. So projects such as the mining royalty bill and other reforms are expected to make little progress at this stage of the year. A bill that established an ad valorem mining royalty in favor of the state of Chile was approved early this year by the Chamber of Deputies. By the end of August, after several weeks of hearings that considered more than 70 presentations of different stakeholders, including the mining industry, the Senate Energy and Mining Committee voted in favor of processing the bill by 3-2. The Senate must now proceed to a general vote, which still has no proposed date, and raise indications to potentially modify that bill. The process considers additional discussions at the Finance Committee and also discussions at the lower chamber. So at this moment, it is uncertain when this bill is going to be voted, and it's highly unlikely that this will take place before the second round of presidential elections. However, even if the bill gets approved, TEC has stability agreements in place under DL-600 for QB2, which grants the right to have, for a period of 15 years from the startup of the project, a stable rate for the specific mining tax and mining licenses. This includes the right not to be subject to any new taxes, including royalties, fees, or similar charges specific to mining, which were established after the date of execution of the stability agreement. So in practice, this means that the new royalty will not affect QB2 for 15 years counted after the start of production. With that, I will pass it back to Fraser.
Thanks, Amparo. We will now move on to the Q&A session. Joining me, we have, of course, Don, who will moderate. In addition to Red, Alex, and Amparo, we're joined by Jonathan Price, our Senior Vice President and CFO, Shahzad Barmal, Senior Vice President of Base Metals, and Rael Foley, our Senior Vice President of Marketing and Logistics. So, Kate, if you would be so kind as to open up the line for questions, please.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your device's keypad. You may cancel your question at any time by pressing star 2. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There'll be a brief pause while the participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. Our first question, Orest Wowkoda, Scotiabank. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. Red, we didn't have a chance to connect properly last week on the earnings call. I wanted to ask you as a follow-up, just with the project being approximately two-thirds done, what gives you confidence at this point that the 5% potential overrun on the capital is a reasonable number? And how much risk do you see that that number could increase as we roll into 2022, into the final 12 months?
Orest, great to be with you again. I actually wrote your name down before the Q&A session because I knew you were going to follow up. So great to be with you again today. You can see from the tour that we've just conducted that a lot of the project is, you know, well out of the ground. We've got all the materials procured. We've got good work plans to get the construction completed. The two big surprises that we've had in the second quarter the third quarter that were previously unknown had to do with the seafloor conditions that we are now encountering in the offshore portion of the jetty construction. We're having to pound those piles farther down into the seafloor than the engineering anticipated, and that's in order to meet structural integrity requirements for the foundation of that jetty. So we now know that and understand that. We've got work processes in place to deal with that. We're actually having to weld additional piling pieces together to drive them farther into the ground. So we now know what that is and what it takes to do that. So that's part of the calculation. The other thing that occurred in the third quarter, there's a large pump station up at the tailings facility. The earthwork, all of the ground preparation that we had done to construct that pump station actually turned up a fault, a weakness in the ground that moved, so the site was no longer structurally sound for, you know, to put a pump station on it without a lot of remediation. It was actually better for us from an engineering and construction perspective to just move it to another location and start over and prepare that ground. So again, that's engineered, well known now. We're you know, somewhere 25% or more complete on doing the earthwork on the new pump station location. All the material, any material differences that we needed to construct that are well in hand. And then, you know, the other thing that we've been dealing with is weather, both offshore, you know, when there's high seas and wave conditions, we can't put divers in the water. It's not safe to do that. So we've had higher down days in the third quarter than we had anticipated as a result of that. And likewise, up at elevation, we've had some high wind conditions that we've had to deal with. That again, safety is paramount, and we just don't lift big pieces when there's high wind conditions. So that, you know, weather continues to be an unknown. But the other two things that I described are well understood now, engineered, and you know, workarounds, if you will, are in place and underway.
And Red, in terms of though where you're at right now, I mean, you're 2/3 done. Are you at peak workforce, and is that basically now going to be maintained till the finish?
Forrest, we can put more people to work on this project than we have right now, and we are trying very aggressively to do that. Amparo and Stephanie Shaw and our tech team here in Chile have put together a very creative site. It's a portal where people can apply to work on this project. It's the first time it's ever been done in this country. You know, we've got 11, 12 major contractors working on this project, and they're all doing their own hiring effort. We've actually coordinated that for them, and it's like a one-stop shopping for craft people, food service people, any type of employee or skill set that we need. The contractors just post them out there. The candidates come to this one site and get, you know, and then the contractors have visibility to that. And the first week we had it up, we had 500 applications come into that. So we have the ability now that we are three to a room. And we've got the work fronts and the materials, and we're trying to hire even more people than we have now.
Okay, and then just finally, also, the disclosure last week talked about upward pressure on the $600 million of COVID-related costs. Is that, what are you seeing there, sort of, that's changed over the last couple of months? Is that just a function of having to maintain the current protocols, or is something actually a change that's pushing that number up?
Well, a couple of things. We are maintaining the current protocols, and you know, I think we've all been doing everything that we can to, you know, we're all getting vaccinated and putting all the preventative measures that we can in place, and you know, I continue to be optimistic that that's going to allow us to pursue different protocols as we go forward. But to this point, we're still doing all the testing beforehand. Contact tracing has actually become more stringent here in Chile. The contact trace rules are different if you detect a Delta variant, and we've had a few of those where it's put a lot more people in quarantine than the protocols that existed in the past for contact tracing. So that's new and different. We've had a couple of Delta variants detected in the pre-screen testing on the way to site, and has ended up putting quite a few people in quarantine here recently.
Thanks, Red. Appreciate the color.
Thank you. Our next question, Greg Barnes, TD Securities. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. A question for Red, too. On big projects like this, when you get down to the final throes, it's the electrical cabling installation, the process control hookup that tends to be a challenge. How are you prepared for that? Do you have enough skilled employees to get all that done?
Yeah, no, appreciate the question. And that's definitely a big work effort for us here to get this finished. One of the things that we're working on is taking advantage of putting some well-placed night shift efforts on the project. So if you think about cabling, there's a fair amount of it that's brute force, where you're just pulling cable and getting it in all the raceways and cable runs, conduits, et cetera. And then there's the technical part where you're actually making terminations and getting things connected the way they're supposed to be connected. So we can do a lot of that brute force work at night, pull cable at night, and then terminate during the daylight hours and do the more technical and skilled work during the daytime. So that's one of the angles that we're working on, and optimistic that that's going to help us and make a difference. And again, we've got the material, we've got the cable and everything we need, and we're aggressively hiring electricians, and if we have to bring them in from outside the country, we will.
Can you give us any kind of percentage completion rate on that, the cabling, Red?
No. I don't have it. It's low at this point. It's not.
Okay.
That's something that's ramping up heavily right now.
Okay. And just on the de-risking of the ramp up, what steps are you taking to make sure you have a smooth, efficient ramp up?
Well, we've got first of all a great tech team at Quebrada Blanca, so they're actively engaged in learning and understanding all the aspects of this. One of the benefits of this integrated operations center that we have, it allows us to actually simulate the operation of all the different systems. So everything from pumping at the port, to running the sag mills at elevation, all of that is being simulated now at this operations center. So operators and supervisors, superintendents are all getting to practice and do that. As we mentioned in the video, we're actually operating at the mine right now. So that's a jump start on getting the mine ramped up and ready to go. But we've hired experts in commissioning and startup that are on the job. We get reports from them every week on their progress, what they're seeing, what things that we can do sequentially to commission things as they come available, as they get completed. We'll be doing some of that late this year with mine loop and truck shop and those, every one of those things that we get completed and operating or put into service just minimizes the amount that you have to do at the last minute when the plant's ready to run. So lots of good help in that area.
Thanks, Red.
Thank you. Our next question, Carlos de Alba, Morgan Stanley. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Given again that you are two-thirds completed on the project, when would you expect to do the first trials? So, maybe the cold trial, then the hot trial, and the most important aspects or phases of the process. And then at this stage, what is your best estimate as to when you will be commencing the startup? Is more in the third quarter, fourth quarter, early or late fourth quarter? Thank you very much.
Yeah, Carlos. So the first critical system to being able to commission the rest of the facilities is the makeup water system from the ocean up to the site. So we're laser focused on getting that progress taken care of and start commissioning there. Our team has come up with some very innovative things to help commission that just as early as we possibly can. We're going to use, a variety of equipment to help us do that and speed that up. The whole thing hinges on grinding line one as the critical path to actually, crush and grind rock, float mineral and produce copper concentrate, and that's going to happen in the second half of next year.
Thank you. Our next question, Jackie Przybylowski from BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation. I'm looking forward to seeing QB2 in person someday soon. I just have a question because you mentioned it at the beginning about QB3, QB4, subsequent phases. And I know you've said before that that's something that's maybe a little bit farther away, but since you brought it up, can you give us some commentary or color in terms of what you're seeing, what the timeline might be? I know there's been different sort of ideas in the past with whether QB3 is going to be a smaller project and QB4 was going to be bigger or QB3 was going to be bigger. Can you just give us any kind of color on how you're seeing that subsequent phases at this moment?
Go ahead, Red.
Yeah, so Jack, you appreciate the question. I got to tell you, I'm just so excited about this mineral deposit and the opportunities that we have here going forward. The mineral itself will support, much more copper concentrator capacity than what we're building today. But the way the pieces have come together on QB2, it looks like we've got a very capital efficient opportunity to add an additional sag line and ball mills, et cetera, and really not have to add any other infrastructure other than just those components up at the concentrator itself. So that, any time you can do something like that's capital efficient and has some permitting advantages to it. You don't have to permit a tailing dam and a lot of the things that we had to do for QB2 or that we would have to do for a much larger expansion. So it looks like we've got a very attractive sweet spot there that we're all pretty excited about.
And Jackie, maybe I could add that we're really moving towards a phase of the company's history that as we get QB2 completed, we anticipate being in a phase for 2, 3, 4 years of a lot of capital available to return to shareholders while growth carries on a very capital light basis. And we'll be actually able to give you more information on both that phase and that plan, including on QB3, possibly by the end of this year or early next quarter.
That's fantastic. So I guess, like to summarize, that would be a sort of a add-on or a incremental expansion, and then you'd be envisioning a bigger expansion probably subsequent to that. Is that fair? Like with more infrastructure or tailings or whatever.
Yeah, it's quite possible, but the subsequent one you referred to would be several years down the road.
Yeah, right. Okay, no, that sounds good. Thank you so much. And maybe one other question, just on the constitutional reforms. That presentation was super helpful. And I recognize what you're saying, that there's probably going to be minimal progress through the presidential election. Can you talk about maybe after that presidential election, what you're thinking the timeline is? Do you expect a resolution will be made sort of by mid next year or earlier or later in terms of like wrapping up the entire understanding of what the royalties will be to the industry?
Perel, over to you.
Okay. Hello, Jackie. At this moment, we don't have that information, but it's highly possible that a definition will be known by early next year. But as I said, it's not clear at this moment.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Our last question, Brian MacArthur from Raymond James. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I just want to go back to the seafloor issue and just make sure, like, is this possible it's going to delay 6 months and this could actually ultimately become a critical path problem? I'm just trying to understand exactly. I mean, you talked about, you know, costs are going to go up, but is this just a question of throwing a lot more money at it quickly? Or you talked about weather too. Is there a real risk that this is becoming quite problematic?
So, Brian, if you look back at the photos that we provided on that offshore jetty, there's a temporary island that we've constructed out away from the the current jetty construction. And what we're doing there is we're actually driving piles and building jetty back toward the jetty that's coming from onshore. Excuse me. So that location of that temporary island is the location where the water pipelines that actually bring the water from the ocean into our desalinization plant, and then the outfall pipes to take the brine back out to the ocean and be put back in the water. So that's the length of jetty that we need to build to get the desalinization plant running and start pushing water up the hill. The jetty construction from that island farther out into the ocean is for the ship loader.
Okay.
So you don't have to have all of that built to start bringing water up the hill and commissioning grinding line one.
Right, that's what I was trying to figure out, is whether you're going to get caught on the critical path part for the seawater, because the other stuff just loading you can do later on, right?
Yeah, no, you're spot on, Brian. So,
okay.
So again, all the, you understand it just right, and I'll give you one other, for instance, and I don't want to get too engineering wonky on everybody here, but we're putting in some additional infrastructure that's temporary, that's actually going to help us lay the pipes out into the ocean floor, et cetera. We've driven some piles and done some things. We're going to put another one of these temporary islands in to help us do all of that. When we take effort hours on components like that, we don't get any credit for actually making construction progress. But in the grand scheme of things, it's overall wise and efficient for us to do those kinds of things, and not worry so much about construction progress as worrying about how do we best, most effectively build those components that are critical to get this thing running. So I'm proud of our team. They're being very, very creative, and a lot of different folks collaborating to come up with some of these workarounds and enhancements to get the thing built.
Okay,
and maybe well, thank you, Red. I'm told there's no more. Oh, Brian, did you have a follow-up?
I was just going to ask, I apologize, one more question, too. It sounds like you've had a bit of challenge with, you know, weather and wind. And you know, every time I've been at QB, it's been windy. So is, I can't remember, is this seasonal that it's worse up there in the winter? Is there something, are these two Delta events you're getting up there this year that's made it much more challenging? I just kind of, any color in that would be helpful.
Yeah, well, certainly the third quarter was you know, more inclement weather than we had planned on. It's, you know, it's a nice time of year here right now. The days are getting longer. The weather is improved. And, you know, again, I'm eternal optimist that, you know, that's not, you know, those weather conditions aren't permanent, but we'll, you know, they're subsiding and, you know, we get, you know, longer, warmer work days now, and all of that helps us.
Well, I'm told there's more questions in the queue, so we'll wrap it up there. And thank you, operator. Thank you to everyone for joining us today. If we have missed anyone with questions, please feel free to reach out to Fraser or any of the other members of our investor relations team, and we'd be happy to answer them. So we'll look forward to speaking with you again with our quarterly call for the year-end results and the Q4 results in middle of February. We are, today it's November 1st, so we're one-third of the way through Q4, which is shaping up to be another all-time record quarter and by quite a margin over Q3. And I remind you that while we're one-third into the quarter, we're two-thirds into the pricing period for the benchmark coal price. So it's looking pretty good from that point of view. So once again, thank you to everybody for joining us, and we'll speak to you again in February.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.